Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios.
It's Thursday, August 27th.
All three NBA playoff games scheduled for last night did not take place after the Milwaukee Bucks refused to take the court for their game, Milwaukee being in the same state as Kenosha, Wisconsin, where the police killing of Jacob Blake took place. After the Milwaukee team took its stand, the league canceled all three games that had been scheduled. Games in the WNBA playoffs were also canceled or postponed. Some games in Major League Baseball and Major League Soccer also did not take place. Tennis star Naomi Osaka pulled out of her match in the Western and Southern Open semifinals scheduled for today. Today, all these pro sports leagues and teams and players will decide what happens next. Doc Rivers, the Clippers coach, talked about the shooting of Jacob Blake in the context of the fear he hears coming from the Republican convention. Here's Doc Rivers.
All you hear Donald Trump and all of them talking about fear. We're the ones getting killed. We're the ones getting shot. We're the ones that we're denied to live in certain communities. We've been hung. We've been shot. And all you do is keep hearing about fear. It's amazing to me why we keep loving this country, and this country does not love us back.
An emotional LA Clippers coach, Doc Rivers, yesterday. And here's LeBron James speaking on Sunday.
I know people get tired of hearing me say it, but we are scared as black people in America. Black men, black women, black kids, we are terrified. Because you don't know. You have no idea. You have no idea how that cop that day left the house.
You see these big, strong athletes on television. They look invincible. They look tough. They're Doc Rivers and LeBron James talking about fear. With me now, William Roden. Some of you know him as a longtime New York Times sports columnist. He's now with ESPN site The Undefeated. He's the author of books including $40 Million Slaves, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Black Athlete, which came out in 2007. He was on this show for that book at that time, as well as City / Game, Basketball in New York, written with Walt Frazier, which came out this year. Bill, it's always good to have you on the show. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian, how you doing, man? It's a pleasure to be reunited, as they say.
Well, what's your understanding of how this developed among the Milwaukee Bucks, leading to what I think was a surprise to most people outside that they didn't take the court at game time yesterday?
Yeah, it was a surprise to me, to be honest with you. I mean, clearly, I've been covering this for decades and all that, but I was still surprised. Wow, they're actually going to really do it? You know, I always thought about this in the context of college athletes, as they protest the lack of compensation or no black coaches or no African Americans in power of control. I always thought that at some point before a Final Four game that the student athletes would not play. When the Bucks announced, I said, oh, wow, this is great. particularly mm-hmm. I'm happy it happened in the context of the RNC convention. I said, it was great because this guy hates to share the news cycle. So I thought, that was great. But I think, Brian, the next level, though, I mean, you hear Doc and LeBron, and the next level, though, you've got the Board of Governors, the owners meeting. None of this is going to move forward unless you've got these multi-billionaire owners really forming a partnership, because this is about power and control. And I think the thing that's been missing, the owners have been, say, okay, guys, you guys could write stuff on your back of the jerseys and we'll let you protest and all that because we want you down the bubble. But mm-hmm. for this to move forward, and by the way, I, the NFL is a good chance that week one is going to be boycotted too. This is spreading mm-hmm. like wildfire, but mm-hmm. what you need, though, Brian, is power. You need these multi-billionaire owners to now speak directly to the mayors, to the legislatures. You know, and you need to, for them to threaten, we're going to use our leverage to basically root you out of office. So the players are doing what they're going as far as they can go in terms of withholding the one thing that people want is entertainment and their services. But now you need the people who run the NBA, the people who run the NFL, many of whom support POTUS 45. You need for them to now speak power to power and say, listen, you know, our league, we have an unusual labor force in that our labor force, 80% of our labor force are young black men and women. Mm-hmm. Who come from some of these communities that you were dog whistling people to say that it's okay to brutalize them, to shoot them and all that. So to answer your question, I think it was great. I was pleasantly surprised. I doubted their games today. But you we're at the point now where you also need the multi-billionaires who run these leagues to speak directly to mayors and governors and legislatures and lawmakers.
Well, what influence do you think they could have? For example, I have this statement from the Milwaukee Bucks. I think this came from the players, not the ownership. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it called on the Wisconsin legislature to, quote, reconvene after months of inaction and take up meaningful measures to address issues of police accountability, brutality, and criminal justice reform. Quote, to educate themselves, take peaceful and responsible action. This part is to regular citizens, to educate themselves, take peaceful and responsible action, and remember to vote on November 3rd. But that first part was aimed at the legislature, which seemed to be exactly the kind of thing you were saying. But what would make a legislature, like let's say they're controlled by Republicans, do anything different just because the owner of a sports team says to?
Well, I wish I could give you a really clear, coherent answer. I'm often not in those rooms where are those meetings and those, you know, cocktail parties in the Hamptons, seriously, you know, that's where a lot of stuff gets done. You know, the owner of the Miami Heat, who started organization designed for Black Lives Matter, well, he held a fundraiser for POTUS 45 in the Hamptons.
Wow.
So I guess what I'm saying, Brian, I wish I could tell you what this looks like when rich and powerful people prevail on, white, by the way, prevail on other rich and powerful people to stop it. You know, whether it's legislatively, whether it's to say, hey, listen, I'm going to pull my funding from the campaign. I was going to support you. Now I'm not. You know, I don't know what those conversations are like, but I just know that they haven't been had. And when they are had, I think you're going to see, Chad, we can't deal with morality anymore. I mean, this is not, we're not in the space where people listen to morality. This is about money has become the highest value of our society. And so when money speaks and when money talks, whether it's I'm withdrawing advertising, I'm pulling out of your campaign. I'm going to support your opponent. I'm going to attack now your police union. I'm going to begin to use my leverage to begin to pull money from police unions. I think those are the types of things you're talking about, systemic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the types of attacks that we need, and those attacks could only be waged by the men and women who run these pro franchises. So that's what I'm saying, but I wish I could tell you.
No, well, that's a lot. Well, that's a lot. That's really a lot. You're talking about campaign fundraising. You're talking about personal relationships that they could invoke at cocktail parties in the Hamptons or whatever. That's a lot. Now, I don't know if you've seen this Jared Kushner quote yet. I don't know the full context, but on CNBC this morning, the quote that I have looks like he's being sarcastic about this whole thing. And you talk about money. Here's the way Jared Kushner put it. The NBA players are very fortunate that they have the financial position where they're able to take a night off from work.
Mm-hmm. That's very sanguine. You know, I mean, yeah, but again, I'm going beyond that. I'm going beyond the people who support his father. mm-hmm. many of whom are NFL owners, and if they decide, if they have to have the guts to say, you know what, we're not only are we not supporting you this time, but we're going to be openly against you, you know, because a lot of our labor force, you know, we're going to speak for that, the labor force that Jared Kushner mocks. Well, we're getting to the people who pay his salary and who actually support his father. And when they say, yeah, well, you know what, we're going to, we're not going to defund the police, we're going to defund you, you know, because a lot of the kids, you know, and that's what makes this whole thing complex, even for NFL and NBA owners, in that they've got a very unusual, like I said, labor force, in that a lot of these, the people who work for them are these young African-Americans who have brothers and sisters who are caught up in this vice, you know, who've been shot and killed by the police or in the criminal justice system. And many of these owners believe and have said, you know, wow, that's kind of, we kind of feel it. We know these kids, we know their families. And, you know, so I guess the next level, though, will they have the courage? And that's what this is all dependent on. Will these billionaires have the courage to use their power to take on this other power structure?
So what does happen next after one night of not playing?
Well, that's a great question. That's the big question. Probably they don't play tonight. There was a big meeting in Orlando yesterday. The Clippers and the Lakers, you know, LeBron James Lakers and Kawhi Leonard's Clippers, voted to just leave the bubble, you know, and just to leave. The other teams wanted to play, but then other players were saying, well, if the Clippers and the Lakers aren't playing, why should we? So I think that, and again, there is a reality, to get back to Kushner's thing, that there are a lot of young players or other players who say, wow, you know, we need this income. We need this income. So, and that's real. And so I don't want to be cavalier and just say stay away, because there are real financial consequences. Mm-hmm. But you've got people who are, you know, politicians who really don't watch sports. All they do is look at numbers and they look at distractions. This is a distraction. You know, you've got now these athletes beginning to kind of eat up media time, and that could be problematic. So it would be great. And again, a lot of the athletes didn't want to come to the bubble in the first place for precisely this reason. You know, to me, I don't know how you feel about this, Brian. You know, I'm working on a column on the anniversary of the march.
Yes.
And you know, it's there are consequences. You know, Dr. King has this great speech, and there, you know, more than 200,000 people there. And a month later, a bomb goes off at the 16th Avenue Baptist Church in Birmingham and kills four little girls. As if, you know, in other words, people are saying, you know what, there are consequences to your actions. And I think that that's one of the things that these athletes and even owners have to know. You know, the president already threatened to revoke the antitrust that NFL owners enjoy if they, quote-unquote, don't control their people. So there are consequences to these protests. I cautiously say I'd like for them just to end the season. I'd like to see the NFL players band together and call attention to this, but there are consequences. So I don't want to be I just don't want to say this without letting them know that people, there are consequences to this.
I also want to make sure that we give some props here to the WNBA, yeah, which has taken a leadership role. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. And actually, Brian, I think the WNBA, the women in the WNBA actually are the reason why the players in the NBA have taken action, because remember they have been for almost the last 10 years, the women in the WNBA have been taking a lead on this social justice issue. Maya Moore with Minnesota actually left the team so she could help free an inmate who was unjustly sentenced. And she actually helped him, helped the sentence reduced and thrown out. They started wearing T-shirts in Atlanta. There's a there's a Republican senator who's co-owner of the Atlanta team, and she made some very disparaging comments about Black Lives Matter. So the WNBA players, not just in Atlanta but throughout the league, began wearing T-shirts supporting her opponent. So they so the women in the WNBA have really led the charge, and it's just, and that gets into a larger question of sexism and how those of us who are recovering sexists don't properly support those women. But no, you're, I'm glad you brought that up, because they have been so powerful and so persistent, as Black women in general have been. They've been actually been the backbone of this resistance.
And we'll see what happens in various sports. Women's basketball leading the way, men's basketball, the NHL did not cancel any games last night, obviously overwhelmingly white player population. They did have moments of reflection before some of the games. We'll see if the, you know, demographic makeup of the NHL keeps them out of it. I was a little surprised to see baseball cancel three games, because baseball has been so apolitical through all this, but that happened. Nick in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, you're on WNYC with William Roden. Hello, Nick.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, Bill. How you doing? Bill and I were football teammates in college. But I wanted to just raise two quick points. First off, what the women have done has been phenomenal. Once again, we are following them. I don't know whether Nat Turner and Denmark Vesey and Gabriel Prosser followed women, but I'm sure there was a strong woman behind each one of them, too. Herschel Walker spoke at the convention the other night, and Herschel signed a contract with the New Jersey Generals, which Donald Trump then owned, because he couldn't buy an NFL team because his finances didn't pass the NFL investigation. So the U.S. Football League, the new league, was going to use Herschel Walker in the same way that the AFL had used Billy Cannon when he didn't sign with the Los Angeles Rams back in 1960. He was that Heisman Trophy winner who delivered this new league to prosperity. It didn't work out, but Herschel Walker is now paying back, and Trump borrowed the money from Bankers Trust to buy the franchise rights to the New Jersey Generals. He didn't pay the money back, but Herschel's money was guaranteed. So Herschel's simply paying back the money that that he was given. Herschel could not have moved into one of Trump's buildings at a few years earlier. So here we have a plantation guy sort of saying, I grew up in the South, I know racism when I see it, but he was given a chance to play football, multi-million dollar contract. But the man who owned the team that he was playing for and gave him had a racist policy, his houses in Queens or Brooklyn, that would not allow Herschel Walker, with all the money he'd given him, to move in. And my last point is, I was on a golfing trip 2 years ago in North Carolina, and a woman at a self-service gasoline station had a car that she was having trouble getting the gas tank open. I knew the model of the car, and I was able to help her. And we talked. She said, you down here to play golf? I said, yes. She looked like you might have been a football player at one point. I said, well, yes, I was. I want you to meet my husband. Turned out her husband owned an NFL franchise, and I won't say which one, but they invited me to lunch. And during the course of lunch, he and I talked about rule that requires NFL franchises to interview a Black candidate if there's a vacancy for a head coaching job or a
the Rooney rule.
Rooney was a great guy in terms of making them come to the table. But during the course of lunch, we talked about NFL, we talked about the Rooney rule. And the husband said to me, he says, Roland, the difficulty that people like you have is seeing our perspective. I said, what do you mean? He says, all the people in this club are billionaires, not like Donald Trump. They're really billionaires. He said, and when you ask us about Black people in management, we see Black people as board members, but we don't see them as running our billion-dollar corporations. He said, you can have me interview a Black guy for CEO for my corporation, which I'm chairman of, the majority stockholder. But until people like me actually begin to see blacks in that role, you're going to have a long road to hoe.
And Nick, I'm going to have to cut in because we're running out of time. And Bill, I won't make you describe your own college football career that apparently Nick was a witness to and a participant in. But give us one last thought about anything that he said.
Well, I think the takeaway from that, and Nick is great, is that, the power and control, Brian, many of these organizations, the NBA and sports media and professional sports, probably one of the most racist pillars in our society. And he's absolutely right in that, although when they're talking about, Black Lives Matter, these organizations have to look inside because they're, in terms of black coaches, black people in power and control, there's a lot that they have to be done. But I don't think it's that complex. You just simply do it. So, there's a lot to be said. I'm happy that the players began this dialogue, but to kind of get back to the very beginning, we're going to really need the multi-billionaires to step up and have courage if we're going to really carry this further.
William Roden, some of you read him for a long time when he was a New York Times sports columnist. He's now with ESPN site, The Undefeated. He's the author of books including $40 Million Slaves, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Black Athlete, which came out in 2007, as well as City/Game, Basketball in New York, written with Walt Frazier, which came out this year. Bill, thank you so much.
Hey, Brian, it's always a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.